Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Health Wealth Podcast. We have another great episode this week. We've got another amazing guest for you. I'm joined by Chris Nicol. He's a personal trainer since 2014. He's trained the public and athletes at various levels. He's a got a strength and conditioning degree. He currently trains clients in Scotland near Aberdeen through face-to-face and also online and through an app. He speaks on many other podcasts and has his own podcast called the Racket Athlete Podcast. And he's going to be sharing his expertise in exercise, fitness, and health with us today. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for that, Ryan. I appreciate that nice welcome there. So I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. And I'm also joined by Barry, my co-host, who's back today. How are you doing, Barry?
Yeah, very well, Ryan. Thanks again for having me, and good to be back. Looking forward to another great discussion on all things fitness related, health related, and really looking forward to hearing Chris's story.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. And we're a very Scottish heavy podcast this evening. As I was telling Chris earlier, I'm half Scottish myself, so we're basically a fully Scottish podcast here tonight. So, Chris, first off, give us a bit of background on yourself. Tell us a bit about yourself and what it is you do in a bit more detail, and then we'll jump into some topics.
Okay, cool. So my background's basically got into sport and fitness really at a young age, encouraged by my parents really. So probably when I was about 10, 12, started looking at sports like squash, football, swimming, and golf. So that's kind of a mix just to try things out and see how it got on. Then I went into probably predominantly went into squash, so played squash a little bit when I was younger, kind of got into it a bit, not at the massive level, but regional sort of stuff. Kind of took it on from there, played till recently, probably last year when my daughter was born, so kids as well. So and then in regards to personal training, 2014, that's when I qualified, got my qualification, got my strength and conditioning degree just before that. So kind of progressed from there, worked with public, worked with various athletes, younger athletes, older, and kind of sort of masters athletes, but at club level with youngsters as well, swimming, football, and tennis, mainly a bit of badminton as well. So that's kind of the exercise and a bit of my background about myself.
Nice, nice. A varied background. I think that's a great thing for kids to do is try loads of different sports, like you did, because being active is important. So I think you let kids try lots of different things, and then there's one they can pick up that they like. I think far too many kids nowadays, maybe their parent might get them to try one thing, if they don't like it, give up. Nothing. So,
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
I think on that point, actually, Ryan, like there's always that debate about early specialization and also like letting kids try things out to see what their strengths are as well.
Yeah, that's true, because until you try things, you don't really know, do you? You know that
Exactly.
you have to try it out. Someone could enjoy playing football and they could have been a pro golfer, but they're just an average footballer because they never tried it.
Yeah, it's always about, I believe as well, I think it's a good way of encouraging kids to try different things before they find something that they really want to be, or they find they've got maybe a good gifted sort of for a sport, or also you have to work hard and put in effort as well if you want to keep getting better. So definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. What the young athletes that you're working with, what sort of ages are they?
So at the moment I work with a tennis club in a local tennis club. They're probably varied. It's like on a Wednesday evening, I go down and do like footwork with them, agility, and speed work on the court. So age group wise, I think they're probably, I'm not entirely sure, but I would say 10 to 14, maybe something around that range.
Yeah. Nice. That's good. That's a good age for them to really be developing and honing their skills for that. Are they, have they got aspirations of becoming professional athletes?
Some do, that's obviously I've been brought in there to kind of approach that with the S&C side of things. So it's obviously starting with basically footwork, speed drills geared towards tennis, and agility drills as well. So obviously you've got different types of steps in tennis. You've got the shuffle step, you've got the split step and things like that. So we're working a lot on that at the moment within the drills we're doing. And then obviously, you know, I was speaking to the coach, and obviously we're looking at maybe developing strength, but body weight strength at the moment as well with the players. So yeah, it's kind of like honing in on the specific, reducing the injuries through the strength training, then obviously coming into working on the specifics for the tennis footwork.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So
yep.
Going to the strength and conditioning, you know, that you've got your degree in that. That's kind of what you specialize in. What's your, you know, what are the main areas you concentrate on within that? What are kind of your favorite parts or the main things you work on?
So within strength and conditioning, obviously, if you're working with someone that just wants to train like an athlete, it's slightly different to someone that is actually in a sport as an athlete. So if someone wants to train like an athlete, you still do the same principles, but it's more geared towards the individual becoming more athletic rather than being in a sport. Whereas with someone that's in a sport, they need to have specifics for the sport, depending on what it is. So racket sports, for example, is completely different to someone that's a boxer or a gymnast or a footballer or a swimmer. So you have to be specific for what the needs of the sport are. So yeah, that's kind of, and obviously strength training is a big thing on that. So Olympic lifting, obviously, as well. Conditioning, so you know, it could be metabolic conditioning, it could be using a sled, for example, or you know, things like that. Kind of that's the areas you would look at within that strength conditioning area. There is a lot more to tap into as well, but that's just some of it.
And when it comes to the, especially the strength training you spoke about there, obviously I know, you know, everyone's different, every sport's different, but do you have certain methods or maybe theories that you like? Are you someone who's training less often in really intense bursts or training more spaced out? Or is there one that's best for sport, or is it just completely varied by the sport that they're in?
So basically, that's a good question. That's a great question, actually, because it all depends. It does depend on the sport. It does depend on the tapering of this when the competitions are as well. So you don't want to be pushing someone, when you've got a sport calendar, you don't want to be, you have to taper everything for the competitions and specifically what goals they're trying to hit. So there's a big competition coming up and they want to taper and obviously conserve energy. Obviously nutrition comes into play as well, but I'm not going to talk a bit about that at all. So exercise-wise or conditioning-wise, you want to taper. As I say, it does depend on the sport and the needs of the sport. So there's the kind of answer there.
Yeah. Barry, did you have experience of that? What was the methods you used when you were preparing for competition?
Yeah, it's really interesting. What Chris is saying about the differing the approach depending on what the sport is. So, obviously, Chris mentioned body weight strength, which as a former gymnast was something that I did. That I did a lot of in terms of building up that dynamic strength, that core functional strength, the high interval, you know, intense training, and using your body weight. So, you know, there was obviously a lot of different workouts that you could do using dip stations, rope climbs, chin ups, leg lifts, static strength resistance work. So that was a lot of that was the core of my sort of strength and conditioning, which helped me as a gymnast. Whereas, you know, we did barely any weights or lifting any really heavy objects because it wasn't conducive to our skill set. There was some. Obviously, movement was very, very important. Being able to sprint and utilize good footwork for, you know, the floor and vault apparatus was important as well. So, you know, you just had to be a really good all round athlete. So, yeah, I totally agree with where Chris is coming from. It's about figuring out within the sport what movements that you're doing and where. How to best become stronger and more athletic, in order to improve your skill set in that particular sport, because you know a lot of sports are very different. Body weight exercises, calisthenics, I think I'm very big on that. That's what I'm building my course around as well. And you know, the other benefit of that is that it's easier on the joints too. So if you are a beginner and you know you're looking to shed fat, then you know not lifting you know heavy weights is risk injury, and it's more difficult in the joints. Whereas if you're just using your own body weight, it's a lot easier, and you can also build muscle. So that's my insight on it. Coming from a gymnast perspective, but yeah, really interesting what Chris is saying about the shuttle runs and the movements, the footwork as a tennis player, as a squash player. So really interesting. So absolutely, it's horses for courses in terms of your approach to strength and conditioning, depending on the sport that you do.
Yeah.
Nowadays, struggling with health issues has become so common that we've started to accept it as an inevitable part of aging. 95% of the world's population today suffer with some kind of health issue, and over a third of all people have five or more health conditions. Now, despite the prevalence, this is not normal. The majority of the main culprits, like diabetes, hypertension, cancer, heart disease, autoimmune and bowel conditions, they were pretty much unheard of just 100 years ago. Now, with all the technology and medical advances we've made, shouldn't our health be getting better, not worse? 100 years ago, we didn't have the medications we have access to now, yet health was much better. How can this be? The answer is that these are all lifestyle and metabolic conditions. They're caused by our diet, environment, medications, and how we're living our lives. Yes, it all sounds pretty bleak, but there is some good news. These conditions are all reversible. By changing the very things that caused them, we can reverse these health conditions and get back to being healthy. Now, to achieve this, we use a natural, holistic approach to optimize every area of your life, from your diet, your sleep, exercise, environment, and more. By doing this, we avoid the need for any medications that always come with harmful side effects. In fact, medical negligence is the third highest cause of death worldwide, and a lot of the current health epidemic is conditions that are caused by the very medicines that are supposed to be helping. There's a steady pattern of the more medications you take, the sicker you get, and all they do is cover up the symptoms but never deal with the actual cause. We like to concentrate on root cause healing, getting to the bottom of what's causing your health issues and rectifying that first. Now, if you spent years in the medical system, your health steadily declining, getting frustrated, and on more and more medications, maybe it's time for a change. Why not try a different approach and see what we can do for you? The majority of medications you'll put on are for life, and you just have to accept it. You do not need us for life. Our approach is one of education. We teach you how to take control of your health on your own, so you never need to rely on any other person or medication again. The long-term solution is not us, it's you. For more information, visit our website, healthwealthuk.com, where you can book a free discovery call with an expert health coach. And let's get optimal together.
And that brings us on to a point that I know, Chris, you mentioned before about a difference between an athlete and someone who just wants to train like an athlete. Is an athlete, you've got to look after them in terms of not injuring them through the training. So what methods and what precautions do you take to try and prevent injuries? That things like working on mobility and trying to get to those smaller muscles that support joints and things like that?
I would actually say recovery is a big thing now as well, and even more so now than it used to be, because it never used to get talked about a lot previously. Times it was just like work hard, train hard. Now it's like, okay, how are you going to get that balance? Because in the long run, is that going to do you any good? You come to a big competition 5 months down the line, you've got an injury all of a sudden. Why has that happened? You look back and you're like, well, what's my recovery been like? Not as equal as my workout. So you need to find the balance between the workout and the recovery. Simple things like sleep, how you're eating, how you're stretching, how your flexibility is, how your overall well-being as well, and truth and energy levels contribute to all of that, to the recovery, to reducing injury. And also, and if we're going back to the S&C, strength training is a big thing for helping to reduce the risk of injury. It does help with robustness in the body, and Barry might have an opinion on that as well. I'd like to hear that, obviously, as well. So, that's probably one of the big things. Strength training does help reduce injury. It helps with bone density. It helps with, muscular strength and force, producing force in the body. And yeah, so yeah, that's basically the things I would say would be to help with reducing risk of injury.
So it's a great point, Chris, about utilizing strength and building up your strength to prevent injury, because I've seen that through my career as a gymnast, and there was a couple actually, I can remember at least a few gymnasts who were very, very talented but were quite injury prone, because they lacked that robustness and that resilience to the high impact and the stress that their body was under, and they would just frequently get injured. So they didn't really push themselves as much as needed in the strength and condition department, which is what led to these injuries. So that's a great point. That is really, really important. And also about what you said about the mobility and flexibility aspect, that is so important. And you just see a lot of sports injuries and silly injuries like niggles because of a lack of dexterity and preparation before actually training or competing, which is caused by a sort of lack in mobility work. So I'm really big on that as well. So yeah, great points. Really get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think pretty much all the data shows that the more kind of lean muscle mass you have, the better for you. I mean, I'm sure there's a cutoff point where if you go like a full-on bodybuilder taking steroids, it's maybe not there. But for the average person, you know, the more lean muscle you have, the better it is for your health in many different ways. But definitely, as you said, the better muscles you've got to support your joints during the movements, the less likely you're going to be injured. So coming on to strength and to muscle, what is the best way to build muscle? What's the best method for it?
So strength, you mean strength training in particular, or just building muscle in general?
Yeah, I mean, you could take either, whichever angle you want to come at it from.
So for me, I'm big on strength training, and I'll obviously, in regards to building muscle, you have to obviously, I mean, it depends on the rep range. I mean, with strength, generally, lean muscle will depend on what reps you're doing, what sets you're doing, how often you're training. Again, it's that word, it depends. And there's no definitive, I don't think. It depends on the individual, how their body works inside as well, chemistry-wise. How the obviously the age of the athlete as well, testosterone levels, if we're talking about males, females, slightly different. So it all depends on the goal as well. So in regards to a basic sort of rundown on training for muscle, for your strength, I mean, if you're looking for like rep range, I'd be looking at between a 6 and an 8, no more than a 10 rep range. Probably you're looking at, depending on the athlete, if it's pure strength and you're looking to lift heavy, you'd be looking at 6 to 8 reps. If you're looking at, you know, a bit more strength with endurance, you'd be looking at the 10 range at the least minimum. Probably if you're looking at more endurance, strength endurance, you'd be looking at the 12 reps to 15 with the lighter weights. Obviously, the less reps you do, the more you work on pure strength, would be 6 reps with the heavier weight.
And do you like to train to failure, or is it just to a set amount of reps?
Well, I don't actually use training to failure as much. Yeah. Not really, to be honest, because again, the injury risk is a little bit higher, I think, with that. So especially if you're an athlete and you're going into like a massive competition the next week or the next month, you don't want these little niggles, as Barry was saying, that are just coming out of nowhere. like, okay, let's smash out 40 reps. What's going to happen? There could be a high risk of injury. Whereas if you're structuring the program and you know what's you like, you know, okay, this is the science behind it. Okay, this is how it's going to work. Again, it depends on the individual and how the body reacts to these types of training. So again, you may need to vary training to see what's best for the individual.
What's the difference between, I assume that there's a difference in the way you train for, say, explosive strength or the way you would train for, let's say, a strength endurance. What would be the differences between them?
Explosive strength. And so you're kind of hitting it at the power range there with the explosive strength. So with that, you're probably looking at even you could go to 5 reps, depending on the again with the weight. So 5 to 6 probably would be enough for power reps if you because you're probably going to be going slightly heavier with the power reps. What else did you say? Strength endurance. You're probably looking at a higher rep range with a lighter weight for strength endurance. So that's the how I would do it. I mean, it depends, but there is science out there. There's you know, it kind of I don't know what Barry's opinion on that is either, what his experiences of that is as well. So it'd be good to hear that.
Yeah, the explosive strength, yeah, that's definitely in the lower rep range for me as well, in terms of coming from the gymnast perspective, and that's just where you really need to you just need to be aware, not overdo it. So whereas our routines lasted, I mean, they really lasted for about 50 to 60 seconds. But what you're doing that 50 to 60 seconds is obviously very intense, very difficult, very tough on the body. So there was, it depends on the apparatus as well. There was some apparatus and some skills where you had to do lots and lots of reps. There was other ones where it was less reps and everything was just a lot more high intensity, shorter, more explosive. Like rings, for example, you're holding a strength position for about 3 seconds, so it's a very short amount of time, but in that amount of time you're putting your body under extreme stress. Whereas something like the pommel horse, for example, where you're there's literally no break, you're continuing to move, you're swinging around it. So we had to do lots and lots of repetitions for that, to build up that endurance. So yeah, from my perspective, you had to adapt the type of strength training depending on the apparatus that you were training for. So
When it comes to the conditioning side, what kind of things did you approach that with? Was there any other things? Obviously, everyone would jump to cardio or just running, or were there other things that you used to build their conditioning and their cardiovascular endurance other than just running?
Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, there's various things you can do with this. There's just examples that like you've got medicine balls, which you can use. You can use, you know, dumbbells can be used for even specific sort of, like you could call it HIIT training or metabolic conditioning, however you want to term it. But it's the HIIT training or the metabolic conditioning. This is where it comes in with the conditioning, obviously, for metabolism, for heart function, for lung function, to increase capacity. And if you're coming from a sports basis, again, it'll depend on the sport, what you're going to do with them. So again, you've got body weight, you've got resistance with for metabolic conditioning. For example, like a lot of sleds get used with conditioning for, you know, strength conditioning sort of stuff. So like for example, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. With a rugby player, for example, you may have, now I don't have a lot of experience in rugby, when you're obviously in a scrum, you're looking to push, push, push. So that an example of that is you can use a sled and just use the sled and train a push move, like example like that. So that's the sort of things you could do with that conditioning side of things.
When it comes to, the tennis players, let's say, just take an example, or any other racket sport, what do you look at doing? Because obviously they're going to have so many repetitative movements with their arms. Oh, not hitting the mic, hitting them back and forward. So What do you, what are you looking to build explosive strength in their arms? Are you looking to build endurance strength? And, you know, do you need to be careful you're not overdoing their arms in the gym, because when they're actually training tennis, they're using them all the time?
Yes. So what you want to do with that, again, we spoke about it earlier, is taper the training even individually to each muscle group. So depending on, what predominantly they use in the sport, again, the strength training comes into that for robustness, because a lot of the repetitive stuff with elbows, shoulders, shoulder rotation, rotator cuff is one that you'll notice injuries a lot with racket players
Yeah.
or tennis. Or wrist as well, so you have to be specific as well with that in racket sports. So again, everything needs to be tapered, it needs to be monitored correctly and progressed in a good sort of in a backed way as well. So okay, this is the evidence I'm using, or this is my experience of the success before. So we're going to use this sort of type of training for all of that.
And I imagine with the training, especially for these athletes, are you using, maybe stretching and mobility exercises around every exercise to make sure they're properly warmed up? As you know, like you said, you've got to take good care of them, haven't you?
Exactly. So it's all about, again, when you do your, obviously, warm up and cool down is essential for anybody that trains. So I'll just put that out there. And warming up and cooling down. So warm up, stretching dynamically. There is a lot of science now saying, I looked at flexibility stretching recently in research, and it's actually saying that PNF stretching and dynamic are one of the better like, they did like a study that was 40 men and 40 women, and it was like comparison of this type of stretching, and it said that PNF is one of the most beneficial, which basically means proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. To break it down, it's like a hold and release stretch. My Barry may have some experience in that. That'd be good to hear about his experiences with that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the hold and release. Yeah, that definitely rings a bell when we were stretching splits, because you would go down to a certain point and hold your pain threshold, where it was just the limit, and then you would come back up for a couple of inches to relieve a bit of the pain, and then go back down and test that threshold again. And then you just get a little bit lower each time. Use things like inclines to make the angle of the angle more difficult, so that there's more space at the bottom to stretch even more. And just actively engaging those muscles through a range of motion and movement, which is great for mobility, like bridges, for example. Going down into a bridge position, which is phenomenal for your back and your shoulders, and things like up dog presses, and there's the hip hinges. There's a lot of really, really good mobility ones, great ones for your hips as well. And then there was the more static stretching ones, where you're just going down holding it for a certain period of time. You're not actually engaging your muscles through motion, so that's probably, I would say, that's better for after activity. With tennis, gymnastics, I think pretty much anything as a part of a warm down, whereas to get prepared for the sport, it's better to do more dynamic mobility work, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that.
Are you struggling to lose weight? Have you tried all of the fad diets with no success? This is the one reason that you keep failing and gaining the weight back. You're doing a diet instead of a lifestyle. Nobody keeps up a diet long term. Eventually, it becomes too much and you go back to your old eating ways and the weight comes back on. This is where our 12-week fat loss plan is completely different. This is not a diet. It's a 12-week journey of learning how to implement simple, healthy and sustainable eating habits that allow you to maintain your fat loss for the long term. Diets are based on the principle of eat less, move more, which are the two main ingredients of increasing hunger. And in the long term, hunger will always win and your diet will fail. We have a very different approach. There is zero calorie counting involved. You do not need to restrict the amount of food you eat you need to eat the right foods. The reason our method does not fail is because we're not starving your body. We give the body everything it needs to be satiated, to be healthy, and to increase our metabolic rate, which all contributes to easy, consistent weight loss. Sound too good to be true? Fortunately, we have plenty of testimonials on our website from clients who've already experienced how well this works. What do you get with the 12-week fat loss plan? First off, you get an introductory call with an expert health coach. You get personalized nutrition and exercise plans, and you get 4 weekly check-in calls to keep you on track. 24/7 support on WhatsApp, and most of all, you get the knowledge to put in place these new habits and lifestyle that are going to improve your health and weight for the rest of your life. Get signed up today by clicking the link below or in the description.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually saw, I can't remember where, but I think it was on a podcast or something a little while ago, and that they were talking about, there was research that actually static stretching before sport, like in football and other things, was actually kind of detrimental and made them more likely to be injured. I don't know if you have any view on that, Chris.
Yeah, I did. Actually, when I was looking at the research on the PNF and the dynamic, and it did come across as not as effective, but they didn't rule it out as such. But it's obviously a static stretch, as Barry was saying, is more for like a cool down stretch that you finished. Because what you're actually trying to do with the dynamic stretch is get the joints mobile, synovial fluids into the joints so they're more supple, blood's obviously flowing to the muscles once you've warmed up. With the cool down, you're generally getting colder because you're not moving around. So you static stretches, you obviously try to like put the muscles into a elongated position, but you're also trying to get that lactic acid out of the muscle as well. Don't know what Barry's opinion on that. It would be good to hear about that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, no, spot on. That's really what we did as well. And the lactic acids are a real bad one if you don't get it out of your body after an intense session. So I tend to agree, definitely. Doing more dynamic mobility work, just in preparation for the training or the competition, it's just much more conducive. Suppleness, you've mentioned that they are really, really important. And it just prepares the body a lot better, gets the blood pumping and moving. Just on that, Chris, would you say, I mean, I've watched racket athletes, tennis, mostly tennis and squash, and there's times where they really have to sprint like very, very quickly to reach that ball. Do you incorporate any sort of sprinting or short, intense, fast shuttle runs into that, into the training for them, or is it mostly endurance stuff?
So no, yeah, really with the tennis players I'm actually working with at the moment, I had a couple of drills for them last week where they were basically doing foot hops in inside and out the baseline, and then I would tell them to go and just sprint right to the front of the net and play, like shadow a shot, come back, do it again. So you're getting that fast feet movement at the same time. It's like a double dunt, as we would say in Scotland. You know what I mean? Like, so you're getting the double dunt with feet hops into the fast feet and then straight for the sprint. So it's working on a lot of things, actually, that two movements here.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, I mean, they're phenomenal athletes. The angle in which they have to adjust as well, because to determine where the ball is, the angle, the height, and being there at the right time at the right angle to react is, you know, it's phenomenal athletes. So I completely understand, you know, someone as yourself with all the science and the preparation that goes into that, because there's so much to it. It's not just the technical side, it's the athletic side as well. And I think that's really, I know in gymnastics as well, but there's been a real innovation of that in the last sort of decade, I would say. There's just a lot more science and detail that goes into it. So the level of skills that we do has increased like never before. And I'm sure it's the same in racket sports as well. You're seeing new records or new data being set that about, you know, the measurements, you know, that are of things that you measure that are being surpassed now because of that preparation.
Yeah, I think as well on that point you're making, Barry, like the evolution of racket sports, you've probably seen it in gymnastics as well. The pace now compared to 10 years ago is ridiculously higher, like much higher. And with squash, for example, you're like some of the rallies are like 2 minutes, but the pace that goes, certainly at even like regional level, national and international, it's even gained a lot more pace, a lot more pace. So but I don't know if you notice that with your kind of your gymnastics movements and stuff.
Yeah, the skill, the level of skills and the combinations now that the guys and the girls that are doing, I would say I watch more men's gymnastics, so coming from that perspective, but the level of skills that and combinations that the guys are doing now, if you saw that 50, or if you talked about that 15 years ago, they would have said impossible, just not
Yeah.
possible. At all, it really is. It's a huge difference, and the same with the women as well. You know, they've the innovation and the increase in the difficulty of their moves as well is phenomenal. So I think it's translatable throughout many sports, I think. So with all the new science and the methods that we're using and putting that into athlete preparation is making that difference.
That's the key thing. The preparation's a lot higher now, I think, and more, as you say, more prevalent. It's more, and recovery is becoming more prevalent now because a lot of science coming out saying recovery actually benefits as much as the gym or the conditioning or the strength.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like you'd read my mind. You've brought it perfectly onto the next one. I was going to say about, you mentioned recovery earlier and why it's so important. So just tell us a little bit about why recovery is so important and what happens when you're recovering.
So obviously, like there's different aspects of recovery you can talk about. So going from a perspective of having a gym session or having your conditioning session or your strength session, recovery afterwards, you've got a lot of aspects. So you've got sleep, you've got nutrition, you've got stretching after a session, even after. Barry will probably know this himself, like two or 3 days after, his coach may have told him to go and stretch for the next couple of days because you're not coming into the gym. Something like that, or that's the kind of aspect. So these areas need to be again prepared, and all the athletes that are working at in a sport have generally have at a high level will have someone that works on the nutrition, a strength conditioning coach, even going down to a lifestyle well-being coach as well, probably. I don't know if Barry's ever had a lifestyle kind of coach when he was in gymnastics, maybe.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. Normally, when I was, in the sort of the prime of my career, or just really actually even before that, when I was, a kid and a teenager and working my way up to the senior, it was a bit more old school. So we didn't have the access to these specialists. But I did in the second part of my career at the finish when I was around 30. Competing when I was 30, there was more of that. But in the lead up to the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, I did get some. There was a Thai therapist brought in to the club to work with me, and I found that really really beneficial. He was great for the stretch work, the mobility work. Did some acupuncture as well. And it was just great for like recovery and well-being. So he worked with a lot of high-level people as well. It wasn't just those footballers, there was actors, there was a lot of other people, high-performance people. So I was fortunate enough fortunate to have ha access to him to help me with that sort of that recovery and that well-being, because he had that experience working with people who were under a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. So that was that really helped me in preparation for the games to make the team and to go there and do a strong performance. So but yeah, there is a lot more specialists coming in now to help the athletes with these various the various departments, which make them just a better all round athlete. Nutrition obviously being a big one. Then there was also I remember that even at British squads when I was selected and went down either for training or competition, that there was even like a choreographer who helped with a posture. Just specifically for posture, mobility, flexibility, and that's all that we worked with them with her. So yeah, there is a lot more now. There's a lot more specialists coming into the preparation side of things.
Yeah, I think at a high level of anything, mindset and the mental side is really important, isn't it? Especially in sport. You know, there's a lot of now they've got, you know, the top people, they've got a special, you know, mindset coach or whatever they call it. I mean, do you, Chris, with it, when you're working with athletes, I mean, do you touch on that side at all, or do they have someone specifically who works on their mindset?
Obviously, like in regards to training people, obviously I don't go around that area too much. But obviously I've got my own experience with mindset. That's all I can talk about, really, about mindset. But as an athlete, you have I don't know if Barry agrees with this, but you tend to have a mindset which is called the growth mindset, where you're always looking to progress, or you're always looking for that next step sort of thing. What's your opinions on that, Barry?
Yeah, that's a big area. Because I've come through, obviously I've got the gymnast point of view, but also I've done years of coaching as well and worked with a lot of young gymnasts, a lot of kids who are coming through preparing for competition. So my approach was always for them to try and be a better version of them, a better gymnast themselves, not to try and compare themselves to, you know, one of the other ones in the group, or try and think too much about result, just progress and be better than what they were yesterday, and have a series of goals. And also you also have to approach, there's different personalities that you're dealing with as well as a coach, and they have different mentalities and just ways of dealing with things. So sometimes you have to sort of adapt your approach a little bit and be more, if there's ones that you just need to give a bit more encouragement to, and others that they sort of know, that they know where, you know, maybe they're not performing. You don't really need to say anything, because they take it upon themselves to step it up. Others are introverts, others are extroverts. It really depends. But yeah, my overall approach for mindset is try and be better than what you were yesterday, and not focus on being better than somebody else, whether it's a teammate or a rival, and to actually just enjoy competition as well. That's what I said, that I wish I got to enjoy it a little bit more than what I did. I enjoyed it more at the end of my career, because I expected less of myself, actually. During it, I was a little bit too focused on just perfection and winning, getting the result. I think it should be more about enjoying it, because when you're there and you're enjoying it, you're looser, you tend to perform better as well. That's my approach, and that was my approach as a coach as well. I always said to them, you know, first of all, you're here because you want to be here, you want to be doing this sport, you don't have to be here. So if you've chosen to be here, enjoy it first and foremost, and go out and do your thing. Just let loose, do your thing. Don't worry too much about making mistakes, because there's always the next competition or the next opponent or the next match. There's always another opportunity. That's my take on mindset. And obviously with any setbacks that you have, I really believe that builds you and makes you better, for sure. That does make you more resilient.
I'd just like to comment on a point there, if that's all right, Ryan. Talking about failures in sport, or like as an athlete, or as a everyday athlete, or someone that's in a sport, I think a lot of athletes now need to learn that learning from mistakes is a good thing. As Barry mentioned, their perfection is something that's an illusion. It does not exist. There's never perfection. You're always having to grow and evolve and grow and evolve and continue to progress, as Barry was saying. So I think that's something, a point I'd like to get across, is really, if you're starting as a young athlete, please, please, please have the mindset of continuation, of progression every day, step by step.
Yeah, I think that's a great mindset that you can apply to
well
all
said.
Life. I think, you know, within sport, a lot of the stuff that you can apply everywhere. And another thing you mentioned on the recovery side was the importance of sleep, which again,
yes,
applies across all areas of life and health. So when it comes to sleep, are there certain tips that you give people to help with their sleep? What are the kind of advice that you give around that?
Well, I generally say to people, you know, the way, to be honest with you, I like power naps. So power naps are pretty good, like maybe half an hour, 20 minutes. You know, if you can get a power nap in during the day, you're doing pretty well, to be honest. So, I recommend, like, you know, sleep when you can, and then obviously sleep at night, if you know, and trying to sleep here at night as well, and get a routine. Like I say, like a routine, a sleep routine is probably best. So a night routine, like even if you can get the phone away at night, out of the road, out of the way, you know, it's not like in your face when you're trying to sleep. And obviously, like, get yourself I actually had at one point, I used to have a salt lamp. Used to like create the dim at night. And so it was obviously like, it's quite useful for starting to relax at night and stuff, instead of having the bright lights on, and just get yourself prepared for sleep as well. So I think that's a key thing as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think routine's really important when it comes to sleep. Just getting yourself into that routine and having, you know, going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time. That's really important for helping with your sleep quality. We did a podcast on sleep a little while ago, and that's one of the things they found was most important, was that regularity. And that routine. And I know, I mean, I've never been someone able to nap, but I know that Cristiano Ronaldo has a really strict schedule, and I'm sure he naps about 3 or 4 times a day. So
hopefully
there must be something to it.
Yes, there is. It's like if you're obviously like you find yourself, like, even you get to midday and you're like, oh, I feel a bit sluggish, half an hour, and you know, during lunch, or you know, half an hour to eat, half an hour to nap. It's those windows of opportunity, you know what I mean? They take the windows of opportunity while you can get them.
That's it.
To regain the energy.
That's it, while they're there. And so on the recovery side as well, because sometimes when someone says recovery, some people will think that means sitting down all day and chilling. But obviously that's not recovery, is it? So we talked about sleep. You know, what are the other aspects of recovering properly? We mentioned stretching as well, but what other parts are there?
So you have different various, I mean, there's a lot of talk at the moment, heat therapy, ice cold baths and things like that. I'm actually going to be like completely honest on that, and I'm more in the heat therapy side for myself. Or I would, you know, talk about that sort of stuff. Foam rollers, for example, another good thing. They're an excellent tool to stretch the muscle, get the blood flowing back to the muscle, you know, because I don't know if a lot of people know, but when you're obviously going to the gym to do resistance training, you're actually tearing micro tears into the muscle while you're at the gym. So technically you're going to the gym to damage your muscles to let them recover. So I think that's a big thing that people generally, you know, that are not experienced or don't have experience in a gym or any sort of sport are like, well, why would you be going to the gym to tear your muscles? Because that's just how the body works, right? It's how it heals itself, how it adjusts, how it adapts. So, you know, you can get stronger, and, you know, after a while you become more robust, and then you have to up your training again because you're less challenged.
Yeah, I think that's the key point you've raised there that you need to get across to people. People think that I can't know who it was. I heard someone recently and they were talking about it, and they said you build your muscles in the recovery stage. You don't build your muscles in the exercise stage. Like you said, when you exercise, you damage your muscles so that they can grow back stronger. But if you don't give yourself that recovery time, if you're in the gym every day, overtrain, overworking, your muscles can't actually grow. So the recovery, and it feels, I know I mean, I don't train massively, and I only train 3 days a week. But, you know, sometimes on your day where you're not training, you think, oh, well, I should be training if I want to build muscle. But actually, you have to take that time, don't you?
That's actually important for the body and the mindset as well, recovery. As we say, with the sleep, with the nutrition, with the exercise as well, you have to recover, because if you want to perform the same again the next time, you need that energy level to be there, that muscles to be built, to recover correctly. That's definitely what I would say, and that's the general consensus, that people think you're going to the gym to build your muscles, but you're not actually. It's the complete opposite.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why you see everyone knows those guys that you see there in the gym 7 days a week, always in there, and they never seem to get any bigger or in any better shape.
Yeah, it's again, it comes down to education, how you educate a client like that. So you come across someone, it's like, oh, I go to the gym 7 days a week and I'm not seeing any results. I'm like, well, what's your recovery like? That's the first question I'll ask them. Even when they're, or maybe they go 5 days a week, 6 days a week. But again, different for an athlete, because they have specialized training. So they won't be in the gym for an hour and a half. They'll be in the gym for half an hour five times a week, or 20 minutes five times a week, depending on what the sport is and how they're training. If you're going in the gym 7 hours a week, you're not you're a gym goer, then I'd recommend you taper your training down a little bit and see how you feel on your days that you are training after the recovery days, and see if you see any difference.
Yeah, would you say around the for a gym goer, if you're working with a client, not a sports
Yeah.
person, but more a client, would you say that 4 days is the sweet spot and have some recovery in between that? Or does it just depend on their particular goals, do you think?
It probably, if you're taking a someone that's just wanting to work on general fitness aspects, say, I would recommend 2 to 3 days a week in the gym.
Right. And the rest and recovery, just
And on one aspect of recovery, it doesn't have to be sitting down, or it doesn't have to be stretching. It could be active recovery. So you could go for a swim on the day you're not going to the gym, or you could go for a walk, or you could go for a cycle. But as long as it's light recovery on the active recovery, that's fine. It's when you're taking that recovery day and you're going, right, active recovery, which means to me, I'm going to go intensity. No, we don't want to do that. We want to keep it light recovery, light active recovery, or foam roller, or sleeping more. Or better keep that nutrition routine going.
And mix in some walking and the foam roller as well. I've got one here at home, and I use it. That's brilliant. If there's a day that I'm not doing body weight exercises or even just going to the gym and doing some work with the equipment, I'll just do some like 10 minutes of mobility. That's it. I'll just go through Let's bridge, some folds, some hip switches, a bit of rolling, and I don't. It's not really a huge toll on my body, but it just keeps the blood moving. It keeps the momentum going. But I'm still able to recover. It's not putting a big stress on my body. So I think mixing it up with various things and just getting out and getting fresh air as well. I think it's really cool. For the days that you're recovering, I'm quite big on that, whether it's a hill walk or just round the park.
Exactly right. I mean, hill walking is a good example of active recovery. It's quite social as well, so you're not really thinking about recovering. You're just kind of chatting away, or you're just walking, and by the time you've done your recovery, you think, oh yeah, I've done a bit of work here, but it wasn't too much. Or so, yeah.
Yeah, I think active recovery is key, as you said, because again, it just relates back to normal life. It doesn't matter if you're not an athlete, just being active each day is so important for health. And like we say, people think, oh, okay, I've got to go to the gym, but it's just being active. There's so many ways you can be active, but we have such sedentary lives, don't we? So yeah, just the active recovery, that's it. That's what I was kind of getting at with the question, was that it's not sitting around, it's just doing the right activities. And when it comes to an athlete, or let's say they're not even a professional athlete, but someone who's, trying to get to that level and wants to train more often, do you cycle training? So say you're doing like upper body one day and then you'll rest that the next day and do legs. And do you do that to try and give the body a break if they are training more often?
So, say they're training, what, 4 days a week, for example?
Yeah,
You would probably,
or
yeah. Just use that as an example. So 4 days a week, that's a little more than a, that's probably get into the athlete territory. So if they want to train like an athlete, I'd be saying 4 days a week, but tapered. So again, you're obviously on about types of training they're doing. You can cycle the training, you can periodize the training. That's getting quite technical, the periodization though. That's like, obviously there's competitions coming up and stuff like that. But if you want to train like an athlete, I would recommend strength and conditioning as a good way to go if you're starting out. Obviously, there's a lot of people that do strength and conditioning, but you know, I would recommend just starting with a basic strength training session, maybe twice a week on strength, a couple of days on conditioning.
Yeah.
And obviously taper it. So do one day strength, one day off, 1 day conditioning, 1 day off, 1 day strength, off, 1 day conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah. Just having those days of recovery. I was going to say rest, but it's not rest. It's recovery.
Yeah, it could be purely just recovery, as in like a foam roller, or it could be just a walk or a cycle or something. I was going to mention actually as well, with the active recovery, it helps to get the blood flow into the muscle, which also helps better recovery in the muscles as well.
Yeah, exactly. And a couple of times you mentioned about diet and nutrition. Do you get into any of that side with your clients and the people you're working with?
Not at all. That's something I don't talk about. I mean, I don't specialize in that. I actually work with someone called Monica Gostick, who has her own nutrition business, and I run the exercise side of it.
Okay, so, perfect.
Yeah, that's as far as I'll go with the nutrition. I kind of work with clients, and I'll put them on to Monica for any nutritional advice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because it's an important part with building muscle as well, isn't it? Because I mean, if you're, you know, if they're doing the training and they're working, but if they're not fueling their body properly, that's going to seriously hamper their progress.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is a key thing as well. So I would recommend, if you're obviously taking your training a bit more seriously and you're looking for that little bit of an edge, get someone to help you with your nutrition as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I definitely think so. So, I mean, we've taken up a good amount of your time this evening, which I really appreciate. I mean, is there any other kind of things you'd like to leave us with? Anything else that we haven't really covered?
I think just on a basic term, I think if you're at a point, if you're not entered the gym yet, you've not thought about training, but you're thinking about it, if you're listening to this podcast right now and thinking, yeah, I like the sound of that, I want to try that, train like an athlete, or just go in the gym, just start, just take a step to start, like that growth mindset of taking that step. And as Barry was saying as well, try and be better than yesterday. So if you're going to be better than yesterday, go to the gym and try it out.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And that's one of the things we were speaking about on a recent podcast as well, was that so many people fail because they try too much at once, don't they? And, you know, like you said, just try and get a little better each day. Just start it, and then you can learn as you go and research it, look into it, get, you know, link up with people like yourself that can coach you and help you do whatever. But yeah, it's just improve over time. You don't need perfection straight away. I think it was you talking about perfection earlier, Barry. You know, you don't need perfection. Just improve yourself. That's all you need.
No, not at all. You know, it can also be a bit scary and intimidating for those just starting out. And I'm sure you've seen that many times, Chris, with clients and the athletes that you're working with. And that's enough to deal with. So deal with that, but don't put any extra added pressure on yourself to be a certain level or have this goal by this time. Just go and feel your way in and just improve slowly, just baby steps, one foot in front of the other. I totally agree with that. And that helps to build confidence. And then with confidence comes competence, comes improvement. Exactly. Comes mastery eventually.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I was going to say, work at your level and then build up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And like Barry said, that, you know, going to the gym, if it's not a place that you're comfortable in, it can be scary at first. But I mean, you know, Chris, you probably spend more time in a gym than any of us. I personally work out at home just because it works better for me. But although it seems scary going to the gym, the majority of the people in the gym are more than happy to actually help you if you need help, to guide you. You know, it's not actually as scary a place as you think.
No, it's not. It's a quite a welcoming place, but I think
Yep.
it's the thing for me is people look at all the equipment and go, "What am I going to do with this? What is this? What do I do with that? How do I work this?" And it just gets too scary for them, like I'm off, sort of
Yeah.
thing. So I think if you have the right guidance, someone that knows what they're doing with with gym equipment, how to teach you, how to develop you, because as Barry was saying, it's not just about the body; the mind will develop as well through training. He'll know that himself, and that's two aspects that come hand in hand when you go to exercise in the gym. The mindset follows the body.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just remembered one question that I did want to ask you earlier. I'll give one bonus question. So
Yeah.
it's just because you said about all the equipment in there. What do you have a preference, and what are the benefits and negatives to using free weights versus using machines? Because obviously there are differences to them.
Yeah. Okay. So for a beginner, machines are quite good to build. Once they build up from there, then take them onto the dumbbells, which is also like the next step. And after that, you build them onto the barbell. And obviously, the more you have to hold on the load, the more balance and stability that comes into play. So obviously, the beginner level would be the machines, then onto the dumbbells, then onto the barbells. That's obviously depending on experience of the person that's coming in. So if they're at a certain level already, then you obviously start them there. But if they're a beginner level, then you take it from there.
Perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. Nice and simple from start with the machines, and they can work their way up. Awesome. Listen, Chris, thank you so much for your time today. Before you go, tell everyone where they can find you online if they want to follow you, if they want to listen to your podcast, or if they want to work with you.
Okay, so I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Just type in Chris Nicol, you'll find me quite easily there. My podcast is currently on Spotify, Amazon, Google, Apple, and I've got a YouTube channel called The Racket Athlete Podcast.
Awesome. We will share all of your links in the description so people can easily find you as well. Thanks again for your time today. And Barry, thanks again for joining me too.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and yeah, enjoyed it as always, and just great to get and to discuss more about as a fellow athlete with Chris on his experiences and expertise. Really enjoyed the conversation. So thanks for coming in, Chris, and for joining us and sharing your story. I really enjoyed it.
It's been great being on the podcast tonight, lads. I appreciate your times as well.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And for making the podcast even more Scottish than it already was. That's always great. Always a bonus. Right. That'll do us for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And let's get optimal together.